state leaders are having a hard time agreeing on not only how to conduct Alaska's business, but even where. I'm Lori Townsend. Governor Walker called state lawmakers into special session immediately after the 90-day regular session concluded. The governor wanted the special session to be held in Juneau. Legislators wanted to meet in Anchorage. They couldn't agree, so lawmakers voted to take a recess and hold community meetings in Anchorage. That recess ends today. What happens now? Why is there such an impasse over the budget, Medicaid, and education funding? Legislative gridlock is the discussion today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. The governor says lawmakers need to pass a fully funded budget. He also wants them to allow an expansion of Medicaid coverage. And there's the issue of Aaron's Law, legislation that would create a sexual assault prevention program within schools. What's the rub? Joining us from the studios of KTOO in Juneau is Christopher Clark. Good morning, Christopher.
Good morning from sunny Southeast.
Thank you for joining us. You sound great there at the KTOO studios. Christopher is a long time, I guess we'd call you a political insider.
Dinosaur.
He's been involved in as a legislative aide, as a gubernatorial aide, or as a reporter for more than 30 years in the state capitol. And Christopher is joining us to talk about how we got here and what it's going to take to maybe what it'll take to get the state out of gridlock. We'll also be taking your calls. You can join us if you would like to discuss what you think lawmakers should do to break the gridlock. Should legislators agree to what Democrats want to access the constitutional budget reserve? Should they be talking about new sources of revenue, such as taxes or tapping permanent fund earnings? Are you contacting your senator or representative? What's your message to them? You can join us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or if you're in the Anchorage area, it's 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're going to be joined in probably a few moments by Alexandra Gutierrez, APRN's Juneau correspondent. She's right now checking out a technical session. Christopher, before we launch into other avenues of discussion, what is a technical session?
A technical session is where legislators meet to fulfill the constitutional requirement that one body cannot adjourn from the other body longer than 3 days. So what they do at a technical session, usually you just have the Speaker of the House or someone acting as a Speaker, the Majority Leader, and in the House side, there's a tradition also of having someone as the Minority Leader there. So usually it's three people. In the Senate, there'll be two people, and they'll be meeting their technical session later today at 2. And all you're doing is you go through, you convene, you read messages from the governor, from the other body. You can take a couple of floor speeches if anyone wants to deliver one, and then you adjourn for usually 3 to 4 days, and you know, again, no longer than 3 days, in order to meet the constitutional mandate that one body not adjourn from out the other way. So the way you use a technical session to keep this special session alive. And as you may have noted, that we're right today at the midpoint of the special session. Each special session lasts no more than 30 days. Today is day 15. And so after taking their 12-day recess, legislators have the option now to meet every 3 days or so in technical session just to keep this session alive.
So even though they took a recess, it's still counted against the special session?
The clock still ticks. Day one was on April, goodness gracious, I think 27th and or 28th, forgive me, the 28th. And so it's just like the regular session clock. Each day continues along. And it's kind of interesting. We have two session limits. One was passed by voters in 2006 that went into effect in 2008. It is in statute for 90 days. And we also have a constitutional session limit that was passed by voters in 1984. It lasts for 121 days. And let me emphasize the 121. People say 120. No, it's actually 121 days because of a preposition from in the Constitution. And why this is interesting is this is the first time that we've had a budget negotiation over the constitutional budget reserve, the three-quarter supermajority vote requirement. This is the first time this has been attempted during the era of the 90-day session limit. And if we were in the 121-day session limit, today would only be 113, and they'd have eight more days to go. And instead of talking about why aren't they done, we'd be instead talking about, well, what do you expect? Do you think they're going to get done? And the difference in 31 days contributes to a different dynamic. And I think that's one of the things I think we're seeing here is that it takes time to build relationships. It takes time to knit together those votes that you need in order to get the budget reserve vote. So I'm sorry, that was probably a long-winded answer to your question, but I think it's worth pointing out that if we were in the 121-day session limit, today would only be day 113.
The point that you made about it takes time to knit relationships together and to make deals, make compromises, this divide in state government doesn't seem to be moving toward compromise and resolution right now. You've been doing this a long time. What do you see as the biggest sticking points?
Well, the biggest sticking points in terms of issues, I guess a twofold answer. First of all, this is not unusual. Back when we had to negotiate three-quarter votes during 121 days, you had these long stretches that were, you know, from the public and from the press and from everyone else's perspective was enormously frustrating because you had moments like this where you didn't have things happening out in the open and Florida-based and so forth. But this is typical, this these long stretches, when you have intense negotiations. As for the factors of this this impasse that we're in right now, it's certainly the budget and Medicaid, which is both a budget item and a policy item. And what makes this more unusual and a harder nut to crack than in past attempts to get three-quarters votes to use the budget reserve is the minority's insistence that there be a link between Medicaid expansion and the budget. And they don't want to lose leverage in that because fearing that if they don't use the budget as leverage, then you will not get Medicaid expansion. So that's where we're at. The dynamics are still the same. You need 30 votes in the House, 15 in the Senate. The current House majority has 26 people. There are 13 members of the independent Democratic minority. And then there's Laura Reinbold, who is her own minority. And so you see that with the House majority of 26, there are four votes shy. And the trick is, how do you get those additional votes? How do you work? How do you talk? How do you get things together? So the issues here, again, are budget. And the biggest one probably is education funding. There are some other issues as well related to funding for ferries, university, social workers, troopers, domestic violence prevention, and also union pay raises. So you see all that is in the mix. If it were just those items, you might see a more swift compromise on getting the budget reserve, because then you split the difference. You have the House and the Senate and the House minority negotiating those dollar differences. But I think what the biggest nut to crack here, the hardest one, is Medicaid expansion. And for the House minority, it didn't get easier when the governor said that, okay, just give me a budget and you can deal with Medicaid later. And the minority is going, no, Governor, we need that budget linked to the Medicaid in order to get one and the other. So that's what makes this little standoff, this impasse, distinct from previous ones.
And we will be talking a little more about the issue of Medicaid and where the situation is currently with what's being addressed in that regard. But we're going to go to the phones here in just a moment, but I have one more question before we do that. Christopher, you were mentioning that this isn't unusual, that these problems crop up. Give us some historical context in that regard. What legislative dust-ups in the past would compare to this current stalemate?
Boy, there's many ways to compare that. 4 years ago, in 2011, there was a standoff over the capital budget. Sitka Senator Bert Stedman was the finance co-chair in the Senate, and he was trying to create a veto-proof section in the capital budget for capital projects, mostly energy-related project. And it went long. We went into May, and in the end, a compromise was reached, and everybody adjourned on time. Well, late, but before the fiscal year began, if that's the definition of what is on time. In regards to the operating budget, the best thing I can think of is, well, the last time that a budget reserve vote was truly needed was really in 2005. In 2006, there was an attempt to get a supermajority vote, but oil prices came to the rescue and the tapping the budget reserve was not necessary for that following fiscal year. But 2003 is one of the more interesting ones for me because in that year, they did not get the supermajority vote, 30 votes in the House, and the legislature passed a budget, Senate Bill 100 from 2003, if you want to look it up, that had a provision in it for the three-quarter vote. And if it failed, which is what happened, then step two was to provide the mechanism necessary to allow a simple majority vote of the budget reserve, 21 votes in the House, 11 in the Senate. And that meant taking what funds available for appropriation at the time, in that case it was the Science and Technology Endowment Fund, drained it, and then the Permanent Fund Earnings Reserve, leaving enough money to pay out dividends and inflation proof, but then putting a sum into the Permanent Fund principal and thereby diminishing the amount available for appropriation, thereby allowing a simple majority vote of the budget reserve. So those are techniques that can happen, and that to me, maybe 2003, the 2003 legislative session is the closest to it, except that what's interesting then is, as I recall, I think they got done within the 121 days or so, and they found a way to balance the budget without the minority. Hmm. Big difference from today.
Big difference. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to join our program today. 1-800-478-8255, or also in the Anchorage area, you can call 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. What do you think lawmakers should do to break the gridlock? And should they agree, should Republican lawmakers agree to what Democrats want to access the constitutional budget reserve? We're going to talk now with bring Dave from Cordova on the line. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Lori, and thanks for bringing this up. These times are just so convoluted with ideologues, theocrats, and financial know-nothings on a certain level for what is being put on us for our economy going to crash for lack of funding. And I think a part of this, in order to alleviate this, is we must revisit SB 21, HB 110, and the results of it. We're paying out for these oil tax credits right now in fields that are already profitable. The most profitable fields of North America, if not the world, are legacy oil. At Prudhoe is under this, and it never was under ACES. Ideally, we'd be back to ACES and have it modified, which, you know, reasonable people were willing to do to compromise to where we're both happy, the oil companies and us. But they're so hard bitten in that Republican majority that I don't know what it's going to take to pull that off. But that's the essential starting point. It's not going to save us completely. And regarding Medicaid expansion, these guys have had 3 years to address this. They're not only dragging their feet and kicking the can down the road, they're smashing the can the whole way. They're just totally abusing a large portion of this state's population and acting smug because they're able to get away with it with their majority. It's just, this is the most terrible legislature I can recall in my entire life in Alaska. I mean, my whole life. I don't know what to hope for. It seems it's got to be in the governor's hand to ultimately grab these guys by the scruff of their neck, he certainly got the population on his size, or on his side. Well, I mean, over 60% of us want Medicaid expansion.
Okay, Dave, well, thank you. You've raised several great points that I want to kind of take one at a time. Christopher, one of the things Dave said was we're heading for an economic crash because of lack of funding. Give us some context about that, and then let's talk about SB 21, which, as most Alaskans know, was a tax governor, former Governor Parnell, said he wanted to give the oil producers incentives for new development. The decline in the pipeline can't be ignored. It is going down. The amount of throughput is much less than half now. And so the idea behind SB 21 was to give incentives to the oil producers. Christopher, let's walk back to some of what Dave said about a crash in the economy and also this idea of oil taxes. Give us some context there.
Well, first, I want to say thank you to Dave. It's good to hear that voice coming from Cordova, because I'm guilty of being too much in the goldfish bowl. And people like me need to hear from more from people like Dave. And that's what I'm also hearing on the streets here in Juneau. I ran into a cabbie friend of mine a couple of days ago, and he says, "Those idiots." And I laughed, which was the wrong response. And of course, I then thought, well, which idiots? The ones who are asking for too much, the ones who are not willing to give up enough, and either camp fits into either of those categories, or us idiots who voted for them. And in many ways, the legislature does represent us. And just as there are strong views for Medicaid expansion and education funding, there are also strong views places like Eagle River and the Mat-Su and elsewhere that believe that they're not cutting enough. So in regards to the economy, Dave makes a good point that, you know, what happens if we don't have a budget and what effect does that have on the economy? And arguably, one argument the advocates of Medicaid expansion are making that this is precisely the time to add Medicaid because of expansion to help offset the cuts that are going to happen in the economy. Yes, it's a legitimate concern, and the question is how much is enough for cutting, and when do you start talking about revenues? I've not heard anyone come up with an answer to that. David Till, the legislative finance director, a couple of days ago on the House Finance Committee, pointed out that in terms of the ratio of revenue per capita, we are at the same level that we were in 1975, and that's astonishing when you think of it, put it in that context, and also implications for the economy. Keep in mind there are a couple of important deadlines that's worth pointing out to understand where we are in the budget. One is May 19th. That is when the governor must act on House Bill 72. That's the operating budget that was passed by the legislature. And I think once he has acted on that, either signed it into law, vetoed it, partially vetoed it, or allow it to be enacted into law, which is unlikely without signature, then I think you'll start to see more clarity in regards to where the legislature may move. Because indeed, we've heard some complaints in the House Finance Committee during the first week of the session that where are we with this other new Take Two budget, House Bill 1001? Is it a complement to or supplanting of House Bill 72? So I think that's a good keep that in mind in terms of the economy and where we are with the budget, you know, May 19th. And then mm-hmm. the other important date is July 1st. And that's when the new fiscal year begins, and that's when the budget is needed. And that's when we'll have a better indication on that. So, yes, you have to figure out what is too deep a cut. They've definitely made some significant cuts so far. And so what effect will that have on the economy? Well, we have to stay tuned and watch on that. Regarding Senate Bill 21, that was the oil tax change that was enacted by the legislature in 2013. And, of course, there was a referendum to repeal it that failed last year. And I guess my question to Dave and others who are advocating for that is, where are the votes? Just like where are the votes for getting 30, you know, where are the 30 votes in the 15 in the House and 15 in the Senate to get a balanced budget? Where are your votes in the House and the Senate to pass a change or repeal Senate Bill 21? One other thing to point out is that ACES was no picnic. Everyone agreed on both sides of the debate on Senate Bill 21 that ACES needed fixing, and in regards to tax credits, in regards to other things. And so that's a whole nother nut to crack. And in terms of oil reform, it's usually oil tax change is one of the most time-consuming and controversial things any legislature can do. If you want them to get done by July 1st and passing a budget and potentially agreeing to expand Medicaid and Medicaid reform, I would say don't even think about trying to.
That will have to be the focus. Yes, yeah, are those things and the oil tax situation If it's going to be looked at, we'll have to come a ways down the road, it seems, at this point in time. We are going to be joined now by Alexandra Gutierrez. Alexandra is Alaska Public Media, Alaska Public Radio Networks, Juneau correspondent, state government reporter. And Alexandra has been in the technical session, which I understand just wrapped up. Alexandra, tell us what happened. Good morning.
Well, it was obviously very brief, given that it started around 10:05, and I'm now joining you guys at 10:19. It didn't even start with Pledge of Allegiance or a prayer or anything like that. It just went straight into messages from the governor and the usual. The only thing that was really interesting about it is, so you had six members of the House there. You had the Speaker, you had two Republicans, Kurt Olson of Soldotna and Kathy Munoz of Juneau, and then three members of the Democratic minority, Jonathan Kreis Tompkins of Sitka, Sam Keto of Juneau, and then Dan Ortiz of Ketchikan, who is an independent but caucuses for the Democrats. All three of those Democrats used the technical session as an opportunity to stand up and say, hey, let's wrap up, and also, let's come to Juneau. You almost kind of timed it worse for Representative Keto's speech, as he was talking about how we could be doing this in Juneau, we'd be more effective at getting our work done. After being quiet for the past half hour outside the building, you could suddenly hear drills starting up. The timing was really bad for him. But the gist of it is, let's come back, let's listen to the governor, let's get our work done here, is what the Democrats were saying, which is in line with what they've been saying for the past two weeks.
So what happens now? Will there be more technical sessions, was there some resolution coming out of that, or was it just the call for, come to Juneau?
Yeah, it was literally just a meeting to keep legislative business going. At the end, the speaker approved another technical session for Saturday at 10:30. My guess, which I know I shouldn't speculate, is, but based on the past couple of weeks, it seems like it'll be more of the same. It doesn't feel like there's, we're any closer to a deal at this point. But things could change in the next few days.
Democrats are planning meetings at the Legislative Information Office in Anchorage for Thursday. What will that discussion be? What's on the agenda? And they plan to take public comment. It'll be open to the public. This hasn't been happening in other meetings. Any word on why or why not?
Well, it seems like they're trying to operate like the opposition parties in the United Kingdom do, is sort of a shadow cabinet, per se, where they're holding their own meetings outside of the standard committee process, basically showing you, here's how we would run government if we were in charge, which they aren't. They are going to be taking up all three issues that are on the calendar, which, as you discussed with Chris, we've got the budget, we've got Medicaid, and then we've got Aaron's Law, the sexual abuse prevention program for schools. So there's only been one hearing on Medicaid so far, and there haven't been any on Aaron's Law. So they see this as an opportunity to discuss those issues, which are very important to their caucus, and also kind of thumb their noses up at the majority by taking public testimony and also just generally trying to prod them into action.
Alexandra, yesterday there was a hearing about the Medicaid payment system. Healthcare Services Director Margaret Brody talked to lawmakers about the progress with the system. A lot of Republican lawmakers have said they don't want to expand Medicaid because they feel that the system is broken. And Ms. Brody said that of 500 defects, fewer than 100 remain. Also, that they're processing claims with greater than 90% accuracy. What has been the reaction from critics within the legislature about this recent report?
Mm-hmm. Well, Well, you know, it was an interesting hearing to watch because on the one hand, the Walker administration is now suing Xerox saying, hey, you gave us this bum piece of equipment. We've had to advance over $150 million in payments to providers so they can actually get money for their services. And this whole thing has been a highly problematic system. But on the other hand, Medicaid is one of their huge priorities, and the biggest argument against it is that the payment system is broken. When people say Medicaid is broken, what they really typically get to is that the payment system for providers is broken. It's so messed up that to add more people into it would just overwhelm it further and put the state at financial risk. At the hearing yesterday, you had Republicans being pretty skeptical of the reports from the administration that things had improved. They characterize the report as overly glowy. And one of the difficulties there is the payment system, this is going to get into sort of tomato, tomato, or glass half full, glass half empty math. But the big problem with the payment system is you had about 10% of payments going awry. And now we're saying we have an over 90% accuracy rate, but we don't know where in that 90% we are. So we could be closer to a 10% error rate still, but putting a positive spin on it, or closer to 3%, which is the national average. When pressed further, the director, Margaret Brody, said that it was about 5% is where the error rate is. So larger than the national average, but still a significant improvement over what we've been seeing over the past couple of years.
All right. So what's happening? Kind of set the scene for us, Alexandra. You're in the state capitol building right now. What's going on there? How many people are around, and what will be happening later today?
Well, it felt like you had just as many reporters in the chambers today as you did legislators. It's incredibly quiet. You know, you have very few staff here. Most people are up in Anchorage, it's definitely a dead zone, and it feels like it's been kind of the same scene day after day. Yeah, I was joking yesterday that I liked the movie Groundhog Day more when it starred Bill Murray, because it just feels like we are having the same questions asked in hearings, the same answers given, and not really much progress towards an end agreement.
And anything scheduled for this afternoon?
The House Finance Committee will be holding hearings on Medicaid through the week. And there also will be testimony on the Medicaid payment system before the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee later this week.
All right. Thank you. Alexandra Gutierrez has been on the line with us from Juneau. We are going to take a short break, and we'll be talking about legislative gridlock, going back to the phones, talking with Christopher Clark, also on the line from Juneau, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Alaska Pacific University offers a distinctive, personalized education grounded in hands-on, real-world experience that prepares graduates to be contributing members and leaders in their communities. This message is sponsored by APU.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about legislative gridlock today. And Christopher Clark, longtime political analyst, is on the line from the lovely studios of KTOO in Juneau. He's in the conversation with us. We're going to go back to the phone lines here in a minute, and I want to remind listeners that they can join this conversation. If you have ideas for what might break the stalemate that's happening with lawmakers both in Juneau and out of Juneau, please give us a call and give us your thoughts. What do you think they should do to break the gridlock? Should lawmakers agree to what Democrats want to access the constitutional budget reserve? Should the Republican lawmakers agree to that? Should they be talking about new sources of revenue, such as taxes or tapping permanent fund earnings? Are you contacting your senator and or representative, and what's your message to them? 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call statewide, and in Anchorage you can reach us at 550-8422, 550-8422. On the line right now is Representative Berta Gardner from Anchorage. Good morning.
Morning, and just for the record, I'm now a senator.
Oh, right. I'm so sorry. Senator, yes. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
So, very interesting program, and I want to congratulate Chris. I think he has a gift, and it's probably a well-honed gift for synthesizing the heart of things and explaining very complex matters. So, kudos on that. I just called in because I've taught several times the phraseology, what Democrats want to access the constitutional budget reserve. And I want to clarify for the listeners that the Republicans, the majorities, create the budget. And in this case, the Democrats, they have to get Democrat agreement on the House side in order to access the budget as they propose. So I just want to clarify, it's not the Democrats who are begging to get into the CBR. It's that their agreement is needed in order for the plan to go forward.
Right, absolutely.
So that's one thing. And I did have something else that I wanted to say, and that has to do, Chris brought up the idea that the budget links to Medicaid expansion is kind of a new thing. And part of the reason I think that there is linkage is, one, because it's an opportunity to sort of force a genuine look at Medicaid expansion, but also the fact that every budget we have, and there are several, there's the operating and the capital budget and the supplementary budget, the mental health budget, every one of those this year has language at the end that says the governor cannot use any funding in this budget to move forward on Medicaid expansion. So that language is in every budget, and that's one of the reasons that there is a link. From the Democratic perspective.
Well, thank you, Senator Gardner. Excuse me again. I'm sorry about that mistake, but thank you so much for calling in and clarifying those points for us. Christopher, I wanted to go back to you and talk a little bit about, Alexander was on the phone with us just a few moments ago and talking about this report that came out about the Medicaid payment system. Have you talked to Republican lawmakers about what they want? Have they spelled out what they would need to see in order to support this idea of Medicaid expansion?
Well, the constant refrain I'm here, well, first, a good morning back to Senator Berta Gardner, and
yes.
and I've always enjoyed her presence here in Juneau and beyond. But in regards to what do Republicans want, I thought it was interesting. Senator Bert Stedman, a Republican from Sitka who supports Medicaid expansion, in a recent article in the Daily Sitka Sentinel, said that in essence that you need to have both Medicaid expansion and contraction in order for it to pass the legislature. And what he means by contraction is cost containment. And that's a sticky wicket. How do you start, you know, because if you're going to expand the number of people who qualify and now you're going to start to cut back on certain services, that's a hard issue. And many Republicans are saying that that's something that does have to be addressed is cost containment, because Medicaid along with education funding is one of the bigger growing components of the budget. So how do you get that? So many Republicans are saying yes, reform. And as Alexandra indicated yesterday, what we've seen in yesterday's House Finance Committee hearing on Medicaid is I think Republicans were trying to focus on a couple of issues of concerns that they see. Management of Medicaid, is the system ready to handle more people. And you heard it during the hearing, Valerie Davidson, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, and Margaret Brody, in essence, were saying, yes, we can, and that many of the problems have been fixed. And the other issue that Republicans have been focusing on is this provider tax, which is not even being put into play yet. It's being discussed as a potential option in the future for the legislature to deliberate on. And but many members of the House Finance Committee were raising questions as, okay, who's going to pay that? Is it going to go back to those who pay for insurance? Is it going to go back to people even who receive Medicaid? There were a lot of questions in regards to that. And right now, we really don't know what it's going to look like because we don't have a proposal on the table yet. The soonest we may get one is next January. So those are the constant themes that we're hearing from Republicans who have reservations about Medicaid expansion or oppose it outright, that they see that you're enabling a system that's already broken is a common line we're hearing, that you need to pass reform, meaningful reform, before you can have expansion. And one more thing on reform, I think Valerie Davidson, the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, makes a valid point, is that this reform is something that you just can't do over the next couple of weeks. It's going to take time. And the question is, well, what will satisfy enough Republicans for reform over the next few weeks to allow a vote on Medicaid expansion within the next few weeks as well?
Well, perhaps some of those lawmakers will call in and join us at 1-800-478-8255 and let us know what it is that they need to see in order to feel comfortable about that expansion. We're talking about legislative gridlock. This is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. My guest is Christopher Clark. He's a longtime political analyst in Juneau, and he's joining us from KTOO Studios. On the line right now joining us is Les Guerra, Representative Les Guerra from Anchorage. Good morning, Representative Guerra.
Morning, Laurie. Morning, Christopher. Christopher, I like you better as a reporter. Well, you're a great legislative staffer, too.
Thank you, Les.
As a reporter. I just wanted to two things. One on how to get out of the gridlock. You can't move a legislative session forward when there's almost nobody in working together. In the Anchorage Legislative Information Office, this building, this glass building, there's almost nobody there. It's more than half empty. And unless you have all 60 legislators working together, you're not going to get a budget. You're not going to be able to spread ideas to pass Medicaid expansion and Aaron's Law. We should get back to work. That's what the Democrats have said, and that's what we should be doing. There's been sort of a misconception about what the gridlock is on the budget. The Democrats have actually proposed more cuts than the Republicans have. It's just that the Republicans won't accept them. Right now, the state is paying over the next 2 years $650 million more to oil companies in oil company tax credits than we get back in production taxes. We're paying out more than we get back in production taxes. That's insane. And we've said, you know, these tax credits are subject to appropriation by law. We should limit the payment annually to about $400 million. We've done that in the past. We've underpaid and rolled over the payment to the next fiscal year. But instead of paying $650 a year, we should limit them to roughly $400 million a year. Oil companies know that those things are subject to appropriation. That would save us $200 million. Medicaid expansion and reform will save us $560 million over the next 6 years. That's a huge amount of money. And just the bill that the governor has proposed, they're going to do some of those savings without a bill. But just with the bill the governor's proposed, it's $250 million the state will save over the next 6 years, because Medicaid expansion gets the federal government to pay costs that the state now pays for health care. So we'll save money. And so with more than enough savings, we can fund the things that the Democrats are looking for, including fair education funding, funding for a foster care system that we heard the director say it will see more children die unless we do something to shore up an underfunded, overstressed foster care system. I mean, I don't want to come out of this session with blood on my hands. That's just not what I want to do. The things that we want to fund are much cheaper than the savings that we've proposed in terms of oil tax credits, moving out of this glass legislative office building because the governor has said there are three floors available at the state office building that he would give the state for free instead of $4.5 million a year for this legislative office building we don't need. There's money in the Susitna Dam we don't need. That's a $6 billion project we'll never be able to afford. We don't need to spend $17.5 million more on this very controversial Bregaw Road, not at this time when we don't have money. So it's not about who wants to spend. It's about which savings should we achieve. And there are savings we can achieve that are far greater than the cost of holding schools harmless, protecting youth from abuse and neglect, Protecting the university and doing the things that we want for a budget. It should be easy, but it's not going to happen if legislators aren't working. And right now, the legislative building is half empty.
Thank you, Representative Guerra, for those points. And Christopher, let's walk through some of those.
Actually, I hope if Representative Guerra is still on the line.
Yeah.
One of the things that was interesting, yesterday's press availability by the Independent Democratic Minority with the Senate Democratic Minority, it's been reported that Minority Leader Chris Tuck is meeting with Speaker Mike Chenault, and I didn't hear any comment on that. Are those meetings going on, and what's the nature of them? Is there a sense of progress going on in that regard?
There was much more progress when we were in Juneau because, frankly, there were 60 legislators who, I'd hate to say it, wanted to get their work done and get out of town. But now that those 60 legislators are mostly at home in their home districts, there's very little pressure. Mm. And so the progress... You know, I don't want to pox things, but, you know, Chris says the progress is much less in these last 14 days since the legislatures left Juneau than it was back then. So we're all hopeful because we're optimists.
Right.
I like Mike as a person, but, you know, they had a discussion yesterday. Hopefully it'll go somewhere. But I will say the progress seemed to be much more intense when the legislature was more intense, when all 60 members were there. And some legislators are saying, look, let's get the session wrapped up.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Representative Guerra. We're going to keep moving along and get to some other calls here. Christopher, I wanted to ask you to respond to that idea first before we go back to the phone lines of limiting the oil tax credits to $400 per year. How would something like that compare to what we saw in the ACES tax regime?
Well, that's where a lot of the discussion is that indeed we're still paying for ACES and indeed tax credits paid for in Cook Inlet to help spur development in that area. So I think what – I don't want to put words in Representative Guerra's mouth. I think what he's saying is review tax credits in general, and I don't think he's differentiating between those that were implemented by ACES or not. And because Senate Bill 21 was to provide a phase-out of those tax credits, and so – if you're going to revisit them, I guess I'd have to see more on to hear what he's really talking about. I think he's talking about what's already planned to be phased out. But again, I don't want to put words in
his
mouth.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I guess we should have kept him on the line just for another minute, but that's
all
right.
That was my other question I wanted to ask him.
All right. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about legislative gridlock and how... hopefully the lawmakers can break this impasse. 1-800-478-8255. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to join us statewide. 550-8422. 550-8422 if you're in Anchorage. Christopher Clark, we had an email comment from Tom in Fairbanks who said, we know what the minority is asking for, but what is the majority offering? That's his first question. His second question is, also, who gets per diem in a recess? Do they get extra office allowance? So let's start with that. What's known about what the majority is saying they want to do?
Well, thank you for asking. And hello to Tom in Fairbanks. It's always good to hear from the Golden Heart City. And in regards to the majority, I mean, you're certainly hearing on the Senate side to hold fast on the cuts that their constituents are telling them cut more. In fact, no, don't give an inch. On the other hand, last Friday night on KTVA, the television news station in Anchorage, Senate President Kevin Meyer said that, you know, he was open to restoring funding for education. So I took that as maybe I was reading too much, but I had a sense that there is some support to at least restoring the funding to fully fund the current level of the base student allocation component of the education funding formula. Those are certainly some of the items that I've heard majority members say is maybe education should be restored, some support restoring some funding to the university. Certainly there are many from Southeast and Coastal Alaska who support restoring more funding for the ferries. So you can find certain constituencies in support of elements of the items that are still open or considered open for discussion. As for per diem, I was glad that Alexander Gutierrez asked that question yesterday during the House Minority Press Availability and House Senate Minority Press Availability of, are you folks taking per diem? And they are entitled to it. It's during the special session. I don't know what rate they're in. They are now entitled to because their per diem is linked to the federal per diem rate, and when the summer comes, the federal per diem rate goes up. So yes, they have the option. They do get paid per diem, and they also have the option to decline it. And I'm not sure which ones might be declining per diem during the recess and during these breaks between technical sessions.
All right. You're listening to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend on the line with us from one of our member stations. Our partners, KTOO, is Christopher Clark, longtime political analyst. And we're going to go back to the phones for a moment here. And on the line from Anchorage is Arlo. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
And what's your comment?
I would like to zoom out and take a macro view of this whole thing and say that if we brought back taxes to the state, that we would not have the voter apathy that we do, and that the public would be giving more direction to our lawmakers instead of just having our lawmakers be this small group of individuals that are in this gridlock with not as much strong direction from their constituents, from us, that they would have if we brought the taxes back. And that really we need to take this zoomed out sort of systemic view and look at the system instead of saying, oh, who's coming to the table and who's not coming to the table, who's getting per diem, who's not getting per diem. No, we need to bring the taxes back so that people will have more motivation to be involved in the system, and that way we will, I think, move forward as a state instead
Arlo,
of just relying on the small group of individuals.
When you say taxes, are you talking about income taxes? What are you referencing?
Yeah, income tax. Let's get a sales tax in Anchorage. Let's get the people. I mean, not much motivating people through their wallet is a strong motivator. Is basically what I'm saying.
All right, Christopher, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I think Arlo makes a good point. In fact, it was a point that Jay Hammond made years ago, too. And when Governor Hammond, regretted allowing the expiration of the state's income tax, that we used to have an education head tax and an income tax, and that, of course, went by the wayside. And so Arlo's not alone in that opinion, that there is more a sense of being invested in what's happening if you are paying taxes into it. In fact, years ago when I was a young aide, I mean, it was almost like everyone would a smile would break out on everyone's faces whenever someone would come up to the microphone from the public and say, I'm a taxpayer and I demand that you do better here. And many of us were going, well, what taxes are you paying now? And in fact, Arlo's point was very much underscored in that moment, that if there was a sense of, hey, if I pay taxes, this is my government too. And this is how I want to see it, what I want to see it to do. So I think Arlo makes a good point.
It's an interesting idea to connect voter engagement versus voter apathy to the idea of having skin in the game yourself and paying into the system.
Hey, Lori, and let me interrupt you one more, and I'll be brief. One more thing we should point out to Arlo, which I'm sure he's aware, June 5th through the 7th up in Fairbanks, the governor has called for this conference of Alaskans, if you will, to look into the revenue picture, to address the issue of taxes. So, I mean, he and others probably want to participate on that if they cannot go to Fairbanks. My understanding is the governor's office is arranging to have this available online so that you can participate one way or another in the June 5th through June 7th conference up in Fairbanks.
Fantastic. Thank you for that information. Let's go to Fairbanks right now and talk to Don. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, and thank you for this opportunity. The $3.1 billion deficit that we've got now is apparently what we're arguing over the most. What bothers me is the credibility of the legislature. I mean, many of the same people who are in the legislature now were in the last year's legislature, which had passed forward funding of education, and then there was a juggling around of funds on the 50-year-old power plant replacement at the main campus of the university there at UAF, also the engineering building there. And this juggling around of funding and then revoking of funding that had already been passed leaves a lot to be desired in terms of credibility. The thing that the governor's asking for, not only education, restoration of the money that was cut by the state, Senate Finance Committee, but also Medicaid expansion, which would bring money into the state. Again, it seems like a no-brainer. It's something that brings money into the state, helps people who don't have insurance now, and because they would then have a means to pay, wouldn't have to go to the emergency room and raise the cost for everybody else, because no one's going to reimburse the hospitals if they're there and have no money or no insurance. And so it's quite distressing. And also with the questions on the funding of things that had been passed before and then taken away, is that going to happen with bonds too? I mean, they're talking about doing that with state employee salaries. If a contract's broken, is that going to cause bondholders and future bond buyers to have second thoughts and therefore raise the cost of borrowing in the future? All of this postponement business and the so-called kicking the can down the road just costs and makes it more expensive and costs more money in the end. And to go from a $3.1 billion deficit to a $3.2 billion deficit is hardly a great sacrifice. It's something that can be easily done and would cover all these things that have been previously discussed and in many cases passed.
Well, Don, you've raised a number of interesting ideas and points. And Christopher, I'm going to turn back to you in just a few moments, but we're going to take another short break and then we'll continue on with this discussion about legislative gridlock and what maybe can be done about it as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Raven Alaska, providing business travel needs in over 100 communities across the state. Find more at flyraven.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking today about legislative gridlock and trying to break through that and what could happen. We just had a caller on the line from Fairbanks who sounded frustrated. And I've been reading a lot of the articles and comments from Alaskans online, and there does seem to be a lot of frustration out there. Christopher Clark is on the line with us, longtime political analyst from Juneau. He's joining us through member station KTOO in Juneau. Christopher, what are your thoughts about that, about the level of frustration and some of the ideas that Don in Fairbanks had suggested?
Well, what Don said is certainly being voiced by others as well, that there is a lot of frustration. But it may be worth pointing out, though, that and I don't know, maybe I'm making hay out of this than maybe should be made out of, but in the last election cycle, Republicans gained a seat in the Senate, and going from 13 to 14 Republicans. And curiously, though, on the House side, the House number of Republicans slipped from 26 to 23. So the question is, what's the message voters are sending as a whole? And is there support, you know, where are we hearing support for these budget cuts, you know, against Medicaid expansion and so forth? And how will this play out in the 2016 election? It's kind of worth pointing out that budget cutting is a way to lose voter support in a hurry. And especially if you're attacking or cutting things like education, which is you know, many people support. And if you talk to Bill Sheffield, why he lost the 1986 Democratic primary to Steve Cooper, there were many things that he had done or had happened to him during his administration, his, you know, the impeachment hearing of 1985 and so forth. But Bill Sheffield and the people I've spoken to who worked for Steve Cooper agree that what really hurt Bill Sheffield was the budget cutting that he did and freezes. He in 1986, oil prices tanked, and they saw about an $857 million shortfall. And Governor Sheffield implemented a freeze, $300 million freeze on capital projects. He asked state workers to take a 10% pay cut, and he ordered $95 million in cuts to state budgets, which at the time was a big chunk of their spending. And he also reduced aid to schools and municipal governments by $75 million, which was unheard of then, and especially if you look at the proportion to the budget, that was a big chunk. And he proposed that in July. In August, he lost the primary. And he will tell you, at least he has, at least in stories I read, that one of the things that hurt him the most was making these cuts. So in response to Don, in response to all those who are frustrated, is that frustration going to translate into votes in 2016, or are you going to see a stronger public out there saying, no, we like these cuts, we like what the Republicans are doing?
Well, let's go back to the phones for a moment here in our final few minutes of the program. We're going to talk to Jim in Ketchikan. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, good morning, and thanks for having me on. I've got just a couple questions and a couple comments. The first comment was just about the fellow who called about paying state taxes, income taxes. Down here in Ketchikan, in the borough, we already pay 6.5% sales tax on everything we buy. And then property taxes, mine are about $300 a month. So I don't really think that, you know, we need to have more taxes. And if we're going to, I would go back to the oil companies. The $650 million payout this year, I think, is a criminal act. I think it's crazy. I remember Conoco talking about, or one of the companies, talking about their big moose tooth exploration and how many jobs during the election, and I think that's all fizzled out because the prices are low. They're not doing any exploration or work up there. So I think we kind of got had on that deal. And then talking about, excuse me?
Go ahead. Quickly, though, please.
Medicaid expansion. As a retired teacher, my kids were in full-time college students, and when they turned 23, the teacher's retirement insurance doesn't cover them, so they were without insurance. And we had to buy it, and it was very expensive. So Medicaid expansion for poor people. And my question is, what are the reforms that they keep talking about? They want to reform it and reform it and reform it. That's all the words I hear is reform. What does that mean to reform Medicaid?
All right. Well, you've raised some great questions, Jim. Thank you so much for your comments. And I'd like to move quickly to Representative Jim Culver on the line from Palmer, and maybe he can answer that question. What are the reforms that you'd like to see, sir?
Well, right now we have quite a big issue with the Xerox billing program that was implemented several years ago. Practitioners aren't getting paid. It's a real big mess. Apparently, Alaska didn't do their homework. There are other states that had problems with that billing system. So until that gets sorted out, there's a lot of apprehension to putting more money and strain on the system. That is one of the big issues, and there has several audits that are recently out that identify a lot of problems with that, and this, I know the state's working on that.
Well, what's the timeline that you would be comfortable with? What do you need to see in order to say, all right, I could support this expansion?
Well, I think I couldn't say specifically for myself. I would speak kind of more in general tones of what the legislature is not going to be strong-armed into rubber-stamping Medicaid expansion without a thorough analysis. So that is probably one of the biggest stumbling blocks in getting a budget deal, because the governor has let go of that as a must-have to get the budget resolved. But the House minority is throwing everything they can possibly imagine in their pot to try to get Medicaid expansion and some other things. You know, there's other issues like the controversial project for some local community councils in Anchorage, the road through the U District, other things like that. But let me just back up a little bit. I'm hearing what sounds more like a campaign than reality. No, we're not at work, and if we'd all stuck together, we'd get something done. Here's what would happen. So when
you have to be quickly, sir. We're at the last few seconds of the program. Quickly.
Okay. After over a week of nothing happening, no budget was resolved. We're all down in Juneau, and it's just simply the House Minority Leader negotiating with the House and Senate leadership. No budget deal was worked out.
All right. I'm sorry. We're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry that we couldn't have connected with you sooner in the program, but I'm sure we'll be revisiting this. Thank you so much to my guest, Christopher Clark, political analyst, joining us from Juneau. Thank you to the callers who joined us. Thanks to Dave Waldron. Thank you. And thank you to KTOO, our member station, who helped us out for today's program.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by
Raven Alaska, connecting Alaska's business travelers across the state for more than 50 years. Find more at flyraven.com. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2015. Find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message is sponsored by APU. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.